Lawmakers did not complete work on the items the governor's special session had laid out for them. They did not want to meet in Juneau, as the governor requested, and they could not find a compromise to tap the constitutional budget reserve to fully fund the state's budget. They also didn't pass Medicaid expansion or develop a sexual assault prevention education program for schools. Instead, they gaveled out and then gaveled themselves back in to meet in Anchorage. But progress on any legislation is still not happening. What's going on? We're talking about legislative inaction today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Lawmakers are stuck. They can't agree on tapping the CBR. They can't agree on tapping permanent fund earnings. And unless the stalemate breaks, state government will shut down. Here today to discuss what is and is not happening with state government is Governor Bill Walker. Good morning, Governor. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Lori. My pleasure.
Later in today's program, House Minority Leader Democrat Chris Tuck will be on, and House Speaker Republican Representative Mike Chenault will join us by phone. We'll also take your calls today on how to get things moving to avoid a government shutdown. The number to join our program is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or locally 550-8422. Governor Walker, what best describes your mood right now?
Well, I'm anticipating a resolution this week for a couple of reasons. One is that a government shutdown is not anything anybody wants. We have to send notices out June 1 under our contract with our employees to let them know that in 30 days there could be a layoff. It's sort of we're contractually required to do that, so that's why we're going to do that. We're not trying to alarm anybody or scare anybody, but we have a moral and a legal obligation to do that, so we will do that. We get to July 1, that's a whole different ballgame on July 1 as far as what happens in the state. The impact would be fairly widespread. Services you normally take for granted may not be available as a result of having to stand down. We don't really have the ability as a state that the federal government has as a continuing resolution, those kinds of things. We don't have those tools in the toolbox, so to speak. So as a result of that, we literally would be laying people off functions that are just, you don't even think about. Licensing issues, permit issues, just general things that we do that are sometimes the unsung heroes out there in government employment that our economy would not work without them in place. So it could be very widespread. And again, we're not trying to use any scare tactics at all, but we have an obligation to make sure the public is aware of what we're aware of. And that's all part of our discussion on transparency, et cetera. So that's why we're not trying to apply pressure to anybody, one group or the other in the legislature. I have a healthy respect for the separation of powers. But on the other hand, we have to, when the dust settles, we have to run the government and run the agency. So that's why we're doing what we're doing.
You're dealing with the reality. You mentioned that there hopefully is a deal in the works, and I want to talk about that in a minute. But what kind of expense is associated with shutting the government down? It must cost money to ramp things back up. Is there any information about what it takes, what kind of expense is associated with shutting things down, then starting them back up?
Well, Lori, the expense goes far beyond just the state expense. It's the you know, the drill permit on the North Slope that wants to drill a well. It's the, you know, it's some of the fisheries permits that are necessary. And so the cost would be much broader than just the actual state government cost. There certainly would be some hard dollar cost in sort of re-upping, reactivating. Once things were shut down, of course, there would be some cost associated with that.
We'll be talking with Representative Chris Tuck and Representative Mike Chenault later on in the program to find out, get their perspective on how things are going. What are you hearing that is hopeful about a deal coming together?
Well, I've heard that a deal was close, but I've heard that a month ago too, so I'm not sure what that really means. But I think they're talking. I hear now that there's discussions. We have met with them. I have met with the different groups about a dozen times, trying to see if I can facilitate, if I can be part of the solution and whatnot. Again, respecting the separation of powers, they have chosen to do this on their own, and that's fine as long as they're having conversation. And I believe they are. I mean, from what I understand, that they are having discussions, conversations. So that's very good, because you know, as I said the other day, I think it's if we spent more time talking to each other rather than about each other, I think we'd get a little bit more done. So I think that's going on now.
Governor, do you plan when lawmakers gaveled themselves into a second special session, they said they weren't going to take up the issue of Medicaid expansion. Do you plan to call another special session to continue the push for Medicaid expansion? And how do you think that should play into the budget negotiations, given that it's a priority for you and the Democrats?
You know, I assume it's probably still in play in the negotiations to some degree. They have chosen not to take it up in my special session that I called, and I was certainly disappointed in that. We had the number of hearings were in the 30s, I think, 30-some hearings is what we had on that, answered every question. I'm hopeful I have some people ask me, have I given up on Medicaid expansion? And my answer is absolutely not. I'm never, if something doesn't work the first time, you get it the right thing. If I believe it's the right thing to do, and I believe it is, we'll stay on that course and we'll get it done later this summer, if that's necessary, or even the next session.
Do you think you would call another special session to deal specifically with it?
You know, I'm not sure I would. Here's the reason. We are faced with a significant financial. We're in a financial situation now. We need to focus on the solution on the financial side. So I think that my focus is going to be in June 5th, 6th, and 7th at UAF and Fairbanks. We're going to have an Alaskan dialogue, and really focus on issues associated our gap's about $3.5 billion. Right now, the amount of dollars we're talking about, the difference between what the Senate majority would think the budget should be and the House minority, it's about a 3%, 1.5 to 3% difference on the amount of the problem. And so I want to focus on the 97% solution to that gap, and it's time to move off of that difference we're at right now. So it's really the time needs to be taken up this summer in two things. One is on the fiscal side, talking about, you know, what kind of an Alaska do we want? We want to talk about, you know, education, education funding, education, you know, education in general, as well as all other areas of the state that require funding. And then talk about how we're going to, you know, raise those funds. And you know, it's a discussion Alaska probably should have had many, many years ago, almost did a couple of times back in the 80s when oil dropped to $9 a barrel. We also want to, you know, we're advancing a gas line. We want to have a special session in roughly November 1st range, first part of November, to present a gas line project, contract, if you will, making sure Alaskans have plenty of time to vet it and review it beforehand, and the legislature does as well. So, you know, there's a lot of things we need to be doing on the positive side, and the fact that we are where we are financially is you know, we don't have a lot of control over that, other than as far as the price of oil, we don't have a lot of control. But as far as the solutions, we have plenty of solutions out there. We just need to get onto those. So I'm anxious to sort of move off of this issue on the budget and move on to the solution.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and we are talking about the state budget today. The Governor Bill Walker, is on with us right now. Later in the program, we'll be joined by Minority Leader Democrat Chris Tuck and House Speaker Mike Chenault. The number to join us is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or locally 550-8422, 550-8422. Governor, you were just on the North Slope. The oil tax credit, as you know, there's a lot of controversy about that. Supporters say it's working as it was designed to. Critics say the state is giving money to the oil companies to develop the oil. How would you characterize the new tax regime after your trip? Is it working? Was there activity going on up there? How do you feel now after being on the North Slope?
You know, I don't think my trip to the North Slope really had more to do with infrastructure and seeing what was happening, more so than the math of it, so to speak. It was an excellent trip. I think that I'm so appreciative of ConocoPhillips, Exxon, and BP. I had a day with each out in the different fields. Point Thompson, Kuparuk, Alpine, and then right there in Prudhoe Bay with BP on the last day. It was not to talk about the financial side, the credit side, and it was more to look at what's happening and get a feel for the different areas, and look at the potential. Looking at some fields that are currently at 6% of its potential, other fields that are producing at over 50%. So how do you get the 6% to the 50% and those kinds of things? So again, I've said many times whenever I've traveled, I'm the governor of a state with a pipeline that's three quarters empty, and I'm interested in putting more oil in the pipeline. So it was more about infrastructure than it was about tax philosophy. I do know a fair amount about that in my past life, if you will. And I do believe that there's a role and a place for credit to a certain degree. I look at this as an opportunity perhaps to shift things a bit and look at a bit of a paradigm shift on how we do business on the slope and in a positive way. So we'll get to that. I did not want to get to that discussion with the legislature at this point. I wanted to have that discussion this summer, you know, as part of on the revenue side, what can we afford to do, not afford to do, as one of 25 things on the table, if you will. And rather than going after on a sort of a single laser focus, let's go after let's put them all on the table, let's have a discussion about it, let's have input from those impacted by it. And I don't see this as a you know, reliving Senate Bill 21 in any way, shape, or form. It's more of a discussion about what can we afford, what makes sense, what's going to make us make sure we're competitive, obviously. I'm hoping it'll take out a lot of the, you know, a lot of the emotion that was associated with that.
Are you concerned, or did you hear that while you were on the North Slope, that this legislative gridlock could give producers cold feet on a gas line? Or was there any concern expressed about that?
You know, it wasn't openly commented. I think it perhaps could be an undercurrent of concern that our ability to access our reserve accounts, which we need to do now, obviously, in our situation, could be a problem. But I've been perhaps more worried about that than most, just because I know that we're going to have to participate in this financially, and we're going to need to look like the stable government that we are in order to make that happen. So I have been concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to talk more about the revenue side of things in just a moment, but let's take a caller now from Sitka. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. Good morning, Governor. I met you when you were here at the Chamber of Commerce meeting about a month ago, and I congratulate you on avoiding the phrase crisis in dealing with financial issues. I can't. I'm concerned as a commercial fisherman in light of your email to staff as state employees. What's going to happen if Fish and Game closes down because of layoffs? Are we commercial fishermen in the state of Alaska going to be able to fish without, you know, fish tickets and, you know, management and et cetera, et cetera? That's my question.
Well, Mac, thanks very much for your call, and I certainly enjoyed my trip there for the Chamber of Commerce. Also, The Blue Lake Dam opening was very enjoyable as well. So always enjoy my trips to Sitka. Well, that's kind of, you know, your concern is valid, and that's what I want to make sure it doesn't happen. Is that, you know, our fishing industry is vital to our economy, and it's the largest employer in our state. So we don't want to minimize in any way our role in commercial fishing. So if we don't have the money to pay the people who do the who run that facet of our industry, we're going to be in a tough situation again. I am hopeful we don't get there, but unfortunately, I have to plan for the worst, and hope and pray for the best. And but it could happen. I mean, it could. We're going to do everything we can to make sure it doesn't, but it certainly is in the realm of possibility.
When the federal government furloughed their people, 2 years ago, it did affect the Bering Sea crabbers. They were the only federal fishery, mm-hmm. I think, at the time in Alaska that was affected. But they had a quota, they had quota shares, and they were able to just wait and catch the crab when they could. But with salmon, salmon, you know, you got to get them when they're there. And I'm certainly not casting any blame on any individuals here, but it's a very I that thought occurred to me when I heard about your email and we've been following the crisis, and our group, you know, my fishing group, and I'm sure others would like to know, if, you know, Todd, does that mean we can't fish? Is there a possibility of that? And as far as I can tell, it looks like there is a possibility of that.
Unfortunately, there is a possibility of that. It might be slim, but if it was, it would be devastating.
Well, thank you, Matt, for that call. Governor, let's talk about the idea of new sources of revenue. Oil right now is around $65 a barrel. It's up $15 from where it was hanging at $50 a barrel for quite some time. But I don't imagine that $15 per barrel makes that much difference for the deficit that we're facing right now. So what about the idea of new sources of revenue? Is it time to look at an income tax again for Alaskans, or to cap the permanent fund, use some of the earnings of the permanent fund? What are your thoughts in that regard?
You know, I think it's going to be a combination of a lot of things. And I think that we've seen some options that to collect a dollar, it costs us 75 cents to collect the dollar. That's pretty painful for that 25 cents. So we want to make sure that whatever ones we use is as fair as possible, and to all Alaskans, whether you're in rural Alaska or in urban Alaska, that's not industry-centric, necessarily going after one particular industry or another industry. We've had some industries come to us and say, we could probably pay a little bit more on some of the licensing things and whatnot. So it's been refreshing those that have done that. So I think it's important that the most important thing is that we have a discussion about it first, so everybody is able to have an input. You know, the conversation will begin in Fairbanks. It will not end in Fairbanks. It's a dialogue. We're going to have a couple of hundred people at the dialogue, but we're also going to have ways people can view it and can send an email and comment during the discussion. So we really are trying to make this, I mean, you know, this part of the year isn't the best time of the year to reach out to people and say, hey, take some time off and watch this. But we hope they will. I hope that we hope that they will participate in whatever form of social media we have available for them. And so it's open. It's certainly open, obviously open to the public, certainly open to the press. We're not trying to do anything behind closed doors. It's a discussion that some will be uncomfortable having. I don't have that luxury of saying this uncomfortable. I'm not going to have the discussion because as governor, I don't. We'll have the discussion because it's part of the solution.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide to call in if you have a question for Governor Bill Walker. He's on for about another 10 minutes, and then we're going to switch and have Representative Chris Tuck and Representative Mike Chenault join us. 1-800-478-8255 or locally 550-8422 is the number to call. We're not through this year's negotiations or even getting to the point yet where the budget is fully funded, as you have requested of lawmakers. What about next year? We'll be right back at this again next year, will we not?
We will to a certain extent. Certainly there'll be more budget adjustments, but I think we'll have the sort of the rising tide would be to that would be other forms of revenue. What I have said repeatedly, we cannot go through another year of borrowing $3.5 to $4 billion from our savings account. That savings account needs to be used as seed money for, you know, economic development, you know, into the future, gas line, if you will, those kinds of things. So that's my concern, is that we have to have this, the revenue discussion now before next year. So next year we're working with a different matrix.
There's been some discussion about putting more money into the permanent fund in order to build the account enough to actually have that, have a sort of like an endowment almost that could fund state government. Is there merit to that idea?
You know, I think there's merit to using the permanent fund as sort of an endowment for, and we do now to a certain extent as far as in a small degree, but what we just need to have the discussion. We just need to have the intelligent discussion without a vote involved at this point. And that's the problem, is right now the discussion. And again, I'm a big believer that we need to make sure Alaskans have an opportunity to weigh in and give their input, because it's really, we're talking about Alaska's future, their future. Look at the intent of the permanent fund. Governor Hammond's intention when it was created, and we look at. I'll be joining a reception and a dinner with the King of Norway. It'll be interesting to have a discussion with the King of Norway about. I've been to Norway and sort of seen how they have managed their wealth funds, and that's a big difference we have now. Back in the 80s, we didn't have to have the wealth funds we have now. Now we do have the wealth funds. So, you know, how do we manage our wealth in such a way that the benefit from the wealth flows to Alaska as well?
And you mentioned Governor Hammond. He was also an advocate of not eliminating the income tax. I believe he said drop it down to $1 a year or something like that so that the system is still in place. But if we did institute an income tax and even a sales tax, a state sales tax, how much income is it estimated that could even generate? Maybe get us another billion total in income, or what's the thoughts around that?
You know, I don't have the exact numbers on that. I've seen there's a packet of information that the Department of Revenue is putting together, which we'll certainly make public as part of our presentations, that has all that broken down. I've seen they looked at how much a Powerball lottery would bring in, how much this, I mean, they've been very creative and limited only by their imagination as far as, and we've looked at what other states do as far as how they bring in income and whatnot. And so, a lot I hear from folks talking about the school tax we used to have years ago, your first paycheck, then it was a $10 school tax which wouldn't bring in a tremendous amount. And obviously $10 today is different than it was back in the 70s. But, you know, we used to, people remember that we used to, pay our share as we went. So I'm sure we'll look at the school tax again and some other things.
All right, we're going to go back to the phones again. Richard is in Anchorage. Good morning.
Howdy. I have a question I've come up with here and written down. With the districts having been gerrymandered the way they were fairly recently, is there not perhaps a mindset in legislators that their reelection is guaranteed, and that it tends to promote a more extreme position and less of an attitude to compromise? And should the state constitution be amended to move some of the legislators' power regarding gerrymandering to the electorate? And that's my question, and I'll listen.
Well,
thank
Richard, that's a good question. You're going to have a couple of legislators on after me to be able to ask them about the legislative question on that, because that's more in their bailiwick, I'd say, than mine. I always, I've been through the redistricting process for a client some years ago, monitored a bit last time, and it's an interesting process, and one that obviously, each time the courts have gotten involved and sent it back for repeat, as far back as I can recall. So I think that is there room for improvement in that process? I absolutely believe there is. I don't have the magic answer as I sit here today, other than to know that I think there must be a better way, because anytime that the process results in litigation, guaranteed. And more often than not, the courts have rejected the initial plans in historically whatnot. So, hold your thought for the next couple of guests.
All right, Governor Bill Walker is our guest for just a few more moments, and then we will be bringing on Representative Chris Tuck and Representative Mike Chenault to also discuss the budget issue. Governor Walker, First Lady Donna Walker has weighed in on the Aaron's Law debate, saying that in a state that leads the nation consistently in sexual assault, lawmakers should pass this law without any riders. They should pass HB 44 as it was intended. Do you think, given how intractable things are right now with lawmakers, that they should pass what's been presented and, as some of them have said, go back and fix it later and make it a mandate instead of optional? Or do you think that they should hold out and make sure that the law gets passed as it was originally introduced?
You know, I want to see the law passed. Certainly as, the Alaska Safe Children's Act, I think was well thought out and well put together, and I think it's long overdue. And it's been on this session. Last year, the Senate voted unanimously in favor of that. And this year, the House has, so they can't be that far apart. So I'm very, very hopeful. I mean, the numbers that we have are horrific numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that and I've heard a fair amount about the impact this will have on the educational budget and unfunded mandates, and understand that from the educational standpoint. There's got to be a way that we can do this in such a way that the real beneficiaries of this obviously are the children. And arming them with education is one of the best forms of protection we can. So I think that I hope that gets passed this session. I like 44 as it was presented. I think Representative Millett has done a good job, as well as others that have done that. Representative Tarr has done a great job as well. So there's been a number that have. It's not a one person. It's sort of across the aisle on lots of folks. So I hope they take that up and pass it.
All right. Well, Governor Walker has been with us for the first half of Talk of Alaska. He's going to be leaving in just a moment. But before you go, Governor, we have Stefan on from Palmer, who has a message for you. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Governor Bill.
Yes, Stefan.
Hey, first of all, I just want to say that we couldn't have a better hand on the wheel than yours. I mean, the way that you're handling this budgetary crisis is very calm, and it gives people a lot of assurance. It reassures people. So I just want to say thank you very much for doing that, and you give us a lot of hope. A second thing is, my son Sean would like to thank you. You sent him your picture and a letter of commendation. He's the top reader in the second grade in the state, and he's very proud of your message.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words, and congratulations on your son's wonderful accomplishment. I one of the really enjoyable parts of this job is being able to meet lots of folks, and I stopped by elementary schools, and we had a bill signing at one recently in the Mokattam School in the Valley, and it's just, you know. But anyway, you're a proud, well-deserved proud parent, and I'm always glad to hear that.
Well, thanks, Governor Bill. He's put your picture on his bedroom wall.
Oh, bless his heart. Well, hopefully I'll see him at the fair this summer, the Palmer Fair this summer.
All right. Thanks. Well, thanks, Stephen. We're going to take one more quick call from Lou in Girdwood before we take a break. Good morning, Lou. Quickly.
Good morning. Governor Bill, thanks for staying on the line for me.
Sure.
I just have a comment about the public safety cuts, especially here in Girdwood. One of the things I noticed is that I don't want to say it's a crime wave, but only 327 troopers in the whole state, and we're going to cut 27 of them. It seems like they're having a hard time keeping up with the work as it is. And as far as Girdwood goes, you know, getting the troopers don't save that much money by leaving, but because we're part of the municipality of Anchorage, we'll get between a raise of, if we want the police, a 3 mils to 7 mils, which would almost double people's property taxes. And the worst part is that there's no time. We'll definitely have a public safety gap, because there's going to be, the next election isn't until April if we want to vote ourselves into the municipal police of Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have the time for public process, and we don't want to panic down here or anything, but we need gatekeepers is what we need down here.
Okay.
Governor, a quick comment before we have to go?
Yeah, I'll certainly, discuss that with Commissioner Folger. And 27 is a big cut in numbers. It's about an 8 or 9% cut. And so I'm not pleasant to do that, but I'll talk with Commissioner Folger about that to see. That's a critical area, and that highway is one that we need to make sure we have good coverage on that. So we'll see what we can do.
Thank you so much to Governor Bill Walker for being with us on the first half of Talk of Alaska this morning as we're talking about the budget and how we can get things moving. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Representative Chris Tuck and Representative Mike Chenault will be on with us as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
Join Alaska Public Media for a talk by boreal herbalist Beverly Gray on May 29th at 7 p.m. at Alaska Pacific University. Gray is the author of the national best-selling and award-winning book, The Boreal Herbal, Wild Food and Medicine Plants of the North. Gray explains the benefits of wild herbs and how they can best be incorporated into our everyday lives. Tickets and more information at alaskapublic.org, sponsored by Alaska Pacific University, a benefit for Alaska Public Media.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about the state budget and how hopefully lawmakers can come to agreement and get things moving again to fund the state's budget. We just heard from Governor Bill Walker. He was on for the first half of the program, and now joining me is House Minority Leader, Anchorage Democrat, Representative Chris Tuck. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here in the studio with us. And on the phone, joining us from Nikiski, I believe, is House Speaker Mike Chenault. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. And no, I'm not in Nikiski. I'm in Anchorage. I've been in Anchorage for the last week trying to put together a budget package so that we can get out of town.
Okay, so you are in Anchorage. All right, well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate that you can be on with us as well. I want to start with you, Representative Tuck. Spell it out for us. What would you need in order to support using the Constitutional Budget Reserve? Where are things currently, and what's on the table? Is there a deal coming together?
Well, we've been upfront from the very beginning that we want to make sure that we give a lasting commitment to public education, making sure that we have affordable, accessible health care for working Alaskans, and making our communities safer, as well as providing opportunities. And so we want to have a bipartisan budget that we can stand side by side with the majority and saying, here is a budget that reflects the spectrum of all Alaskans. So senior benefits is a big deal for us. Medicaid expansion has been really important for us. Public education, as I stated earlier, and making sure that we honor some of the labor contracts that we've made promises to.
You said recently that you may not need Medicaid expansion right now to vote to use the Constitutional Budget Reserve. What changed, or what's the discussion there?
I don't think I've ever said that. I don't think I've ever said that we don't need Medicaid expansion.
So that's still a very important issue.
Yeah, and that's a simple line item into the operating budget for receipt authority from the federal money. It's basically revenue sharing that the federal government's willing to share with Alaskans to make sure that we have a healthy working class of people.
What about using permanent fund earnings? Is this an idea that you could live with or no?
That's something that the majority has been able to access all along without us. You know, it's a simple majority vote on that. I don't think it's a wise decision. I think a better decision is to have a bipartisan budget. And to, if we're going to go into the Constitution Budget Reserve, let's have a constitutional budget to do that.
All right. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to join us statewide or locally in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. 550-8422. House Speaker Representative Mike Chenault, I want to get you in on the conversation now. What do your colleagues need to get the budget fully funded? Where's the conversation today?
You know, as Chris spoke earlier, you know, we've had a number of conversations, a number of negotiations talking about many different pieces of the budget. We have to remember that we're $3.9 billion in the hole. And so the more money that we spend today will be less money that we have in the future to be able to continue funding government without going out for another revenue stream. You know, we've talked about a number of the issues, education, union contracts, and so on. And I think in the best times, we would like to fund most of those items. But we're not living in the best times right now. We're living in a declining revenue stream, and we need to tighten up our belts and try to provide the services that Alaskans need, not want, but need, and try to do that at the best cost that we can.
Has there been any change with the so-called Gang of Six, the Muskox Coalition,
no.
that on the permanent fund? Is the permanent fund idea still on the table, or how?
I think that it is. I think that you know, we call it a permanent fund idea, but it's not. What would happen if we use the earnings reserve is that roughly $4.9 billion would come out of the earnings reserve, and it would go straight into the permanent fund. And it would be for forward inflation proofing the permanent fund. So there's no money out of the earnings reserve going to pay for government. But what that does is that takes money off of the table that the legislature could spend on bigger government, and it puts it into the permanent fund where it would be protected, and it would sit there and grow and make bigger dividends. So what it does is all it does is take money off the table for government not to be able to spend, and it would allow access to the CBR on a vote of 21 and 11. So that's what the earnings reserve program would do.
Mm-hmm. Representative Tuck, your thoughts on this plan?
And Mike is right. It is an accounting gimmick to try to get around working with us in a bipartisan manner to get a budget to reflect the spectrum of Alaskans. And it does take money off the table. It takes money off the table from trying to get a gas line project going. It does limit us an ability to get out of the financial mess that we're in right now. I think that would be a very unfortunate move. It will put the dividends at risk because there won't be money in that account to pay out the dividends. And so
That's not true, Chris.
It is.
Because we
pay our dividends out of the earnings reserve.
And when you reduce the money available. The permanent fund earns goes back into the earnings reserve, so it replenishes itself. And
we hope that will be the case, as long as the stock market holds well and strong.
The money that's currently in the earnings reserve, if we do nothing with it, will migrate right into the permanent fund, because that's the money we use to pay for inflation proofing and dividends. So that's how that mechanism works.
And the point is, the less money that's in there,
as the permanent fund makes money.
It sounds like there's still a lot of disagreement between the two sides here. How far apart would you say you folks are from getting to a place where we're not looking at shutting the government down?
Yeah. I'd say we're plus or minus $100 million, depending on how we are able to negotiate some of the cuts that we would like to see versus protecting and some of the ideas that we have. So it all depends on what we're able to wiggle around. We can have a zero neutral budget that reflects all of our values.
Representative Chenault, $100 million, is that what it comes down to?
You know, I don't know what the number is. Chris and I have been talking. We've talked about numerous things, and unfortunately, it seems like every time that we kind of narrow things down to a few items, it seems like either someone else gets involved or something else happens where some other ideas keep popping back up into the negotiation. So, Chris and I'll keep working on it. I think that it's the last. Well, I know it's the last thing I want to see is pink slips go out to state employees. I believe it's the last thing Chris wants to see, also. But so we're going to continue to work hard and try to get an answer to how do we get out of here.
Representative Chenault, what would it take for Republicans to be able to feel comfortable in supporting Medicaid expansion? That's one of the things Democrats want and are pushing for. It's one of the things the governor wants. There was some audits done that said that the system is operating at about 90% efficiency. What do Republicans need to see to feel comfortable in taking a serious look at expanding Medicaid?
You know, and I think there's a number of issues. And when you say that it's running at 90% of efficiency, I think if you listen to what the commissioner said, my understanding was that the program is 90% efficient after two billing cycles. And so there's concerns not only about that as far as it being two billing cycles, but also what about the other 10%? There's a couple of other audits that are, I believe, due out here shortly that talk about the system and how much the state of Alaska may owe the federal government in payments because of the system or because we have paid providers too much or haven't paid them correctly. So, I mean, there's some of those issues. There's a Supreme Court ruling that's going to come down, I believe, in June that, and I don't have the specifics on it right now, but will determine who pays, whether it's state owes or whether the feds owe for the Obama Medicaid stuff. So, you know, there's those questions, and I've tried to work with my members and said, hey, give me all the things that you think need to be reformed. Tell me what is wrong with the system, and let's put it in a bill and move it forward that Medicaid expansion doesn't happen until all these reforms are fixed, until we get a system that works. You know, we've had the providers that hadn't gotten paid, some that we've heard talk of them almost declaring bankruptcy because they can't get paid, and to take a system that is broken and to add any more people, whether that's 10,000, 20,000, 40,000, or 80,000 people to it, doesn't make sense until you can have a solid program, a solid foundation to work off of.
And are you getting those things from lawmakers? Are you hearing from your colleagues about, okay, here's what we need to have, here's what should go in this legislation to make sure that the system is running in a manner that makes you comfortable and you could consider expansion?
Well, and what I would say is that, you know, are those conversations happening? Yeah, I see that. You know, I believe that they are. Is that something that we're gonna fix in a week? No, I just don't think that. I don't see how we get there. Is that something that if my people got comfortable with that, you know, later on in the year, the governor could call us in for a session dealing with gas pipeline things and also call us in for expansion? Maybe so. Maybe then the comfort level or the I won't say the comfort level, the information that my folks need could be back, and they would be able to make a solid decision based on that information.
Representative Tuck, you're in favor of Medicaid expansion, but do you have concerns about how the system runs, and are there areas that you think do need to be fixed as Republicans would like to see?
Yes, and I would have to say that there's been some huge improvements from Parnell's administration with Governor Walker coming in. He's cleaned it up. He's making it work more efficiently. 90% of those claims are being paid out on time. There's still some room for improvement on that. But I want to point out that in my freshman year in 2009, Governor Palin refused to take any of the energy monies coming from the Recovery Act. And we went into special session to accept those monies, but we had a terrible audit that came from Alaska Energy Authority on the way that they were handling contracts. So we knew at that time that that system was broken, but we went ahead and received the money because we knew that this is helping Alaskans out. And by helping Alaskans, we made improvements, and now it's running much better than it was. We just are asking for the same thing for Medicaid expansion. Let's take that revenue sharing from the federal government. That's basically what it is. You know, we've been taking it in Department of Transportation projects. We've been taking it in energy projects. Let's help Alaskans at the same time. Plus, it's savings for the state. We have a huge deficit. And why in the world are we not doing something to reduce our budget down? I mean, this first year alone, we'll save $6.6 million. That's enough to fund the senior benefits that's been cut. And when we talk about senior benefits, these are poor Alaskans. These are people making $15,000 a year, and we're cutting any of the senior benefits from them from this the cuts that we're making.
1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide to call. We have Representative Chris Tuck, Minority Leader, on with us, and also House Speaker Representative Mike Chenault is also on today. We're talking about the budget. 550-8422 is the number locally. And we're going to be joined now by Charlie. Yeah, I believe he's in Anchorage. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning. I just had one question. The state employees are taking a big hit here. I want to know if the House Speaker, Pete Kelly, and John Coghill are willing to take a pay cut.
Yeah, and Charlie, so far the state employees haven't taken a pay cut. That's the proposal that's out there, and it does deal with the 2.5% increase. It doesn't affect steps. It doesn't affect anything else other than the 2.5% increase. And the real issue out there is that would I take a pay cut? Well, the first thing I can tell you is that I can't remember when we actually changed our pay scale, but we don't get pay raises. Haven't had a pay raise as far as a legislator, and I'm not saying that we should. I think that what I get paid is what I agreed to, and I'm fine with that. So, but we haven't had a pay raise in 6, 8, 10 years now. I can't remember when we actually changed the and got rid of the per diem rate and just combined that into the wage, but we don't get a pay raise every year. We don't get the cost of living increase. We don't get step increases. We have a base salary of $50,000, and that's what we get paid.
All right. Thank you, Charlie, for your question. Representative Tuck, is there anything you'd want to say about that?
Yeah, I think the last raise was a significant one, too, was in 2010, I believe it was. I know that Representative Kawasaki put a bill in to make sure that we didn't get that raise, but it was pretty controversial at the time, and so that didn't go through. No. And, you know, it's a good point to make that, you know, with a $3.2 billion deficit, you know, we can't afford a lot of things right now. One of the things I want to bring up is the oil tax credits that we can't afford. You know, we are limited statutorily on how much we need to pay out annually for those. And add language into our operating budget that if we don't have enough money for that, that it'll just come out of the general fund. And so there is no cap for that. But I think that everything needs to be on the table, including the oil tax credits that we have currently. And if you look at it, everything should be subject to appropriations, especially in these tough times. And so I don't like the fact that we're ignoring the statutes for the base student allocation for public education, but then we ignore the statutes and what our limits should be in paying out those oil tax credits.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Representative Chris Tuck and Representative Mike Chenault as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska Pacific University offers a distinctive, personalized education grounded in hands-on, real-world experience that prepares graduates to be contributing members and leaders in their communities. This message is sponsored by APU.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and on today with me is Representative Chris Tuck and Representative Mike Chenault. We are going to go to the phone lines now, and we'll take a call from Tyrell. Good morning.
Good morning. I got a question. I guess it's mostly going to be for Mr. Chenault. Why is the Republican Party starting to sound, you know, do this whole canary in the coal mine game now? I mean, as far as I can tell, they've pretty much been in power nonstop for the last decade. And during that decade, I mean, I'm not sure how many new schools we've built, but it's been quite a few. And I don't really understand how we can have this huge explosion in the number of, you know, I see nothing but new Chevy and Ford state pickups driving around watching all these contracts. You've got the $6 million land bridge over at UAA. They're building parking garages. They built a new engineering building. They're redoing football fields at schools all over the place. I'm not really sure why we're redoing Eagle River Hill right now, you know, with the budget the way it is. And I'm just wondering why sound the alarm now? Why not 2 or 3 years ago? Why is it all of a sudden that there's a lack of a surplus? Are these problems coming to light?
Yeah, and Tyrell, I think that you've seen that some of us have been. If you've listened to folks talk over the last number of years, we've talked about a number of things: the declining production at Prudhoe Bay, which provides 90% of the revenue stream for the state of Alaska. We've watched that continually go down. We've looked at ways to improve that. SB 21 was a mechanism to look at doing that. I think that the tax credits and the investment that Alaska has made into that will pay off. But a lot of these projects have been started. You know, they've been on the drawing board for 4, 5, 6 years, maybe some of them even longer. When we talk about football fields and road improvements, those are the things that Alaskans want. And so that's why those kind of projects are getting done. And so when and I'd just like to say something back about on the tax credits that, you know, the tax credits are there, and we owe those tax credits. Now you can defer that tax credit to next year, but you still have to pay it next year. And so to try to use a system where or to try to explain to people or tell people that, you know, those are on the table and we should look at those, we are looking at them. But we know we have to pay them. And so do you pay them now or do you pay them? It's kind of like taking one credit card and paying it with another and hoping that the bill goes away. And it won't. It just usually gets more expensive. So I think that we need to pay those tax credits, and let's not defer tax credits and then bump up the size of the budget and tell people that we saved money this year because we deferred those tax credits till next year.
All right, we're going to go to another caller on the line. Bruce is in Fairbanks. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning.
You have a question?
Good morning, Bruce.
Yes, I think it's primarily directed to Mike. Just wondering if you guys, in looking at the Medicaid, additional Medicaid funding that could be accepted, and reform of the program, the current program. Have you guys looked at the reforms that have been made by the state of Montana's legislature this past year in their accepting the new Medicaid funds?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not on the HES committee or I'm not on the finance committee, so I don't get to dig into that as deep as that I would like to, but I know that there are members that are not just looking at Montana's, but they're looking at a number of other states and seeing how expansion went, see what problems that they ran into, and other things that are associated with the cost. I mean, what a number of states have found that instead of, let's say, for instance, Alaska's is, we're thinking there's 40,000 people out there that will apply for Medicaid expansion. What other states have found is that there's double, triple, or sometimes I think even quadruple the amount of people that are out there that either qualify or would be able to jump over to that plan, and there's some concern in those states about what that eventual ending cost is. And so, I mean, we do have people that are looking into all of those facets of Medicaid expansion and trying to find out what problems did other states run into, and if there were problems, what were they, and how do you fix them? Or if there weren't problems, then how did they make their system work so that we may be able to expand ours?
We only have about a minute left, and Representative Tuck, I wanted to get you back in here. Is there room for compromise on state employment contracts? This is the year that they were supposed to get a larger increase in the cost of living. Is there room to negotiate in a time of budget?
Well, I think what this budget needs to reflect this year is the largest budget cut in state history, over $750 million cut, $500 million to capital projects, $300 to $400 million on the operating budget. But at the same time, we keep the promises. We keep the promises on public education that we worked so hard last year to go 6 days over into the education session to come up with a three-year plan. We're in the last year of the labor contracts. And then also we have these oil tax credits. So I'm willing to stand side by side with the speaker, side by side with Kevin Meyer, and say, here's a budget with the largest budget cut in state history from the Parnell administration, from the Republican-led administration, to keeping the promises for this year. And those contracts are up next year. Let those negotiations take place, and then we'll work on further cuts next year.
Representative Chenault, in the final few seconds here, does that sound workable?
You know, I continue to work with Chris. I'm sure we'll meet today, or I hope we meet today. We'll have more discussions, and hopefully we can get to an agreement that we can move forward on that keeps Alaska's employees working, and, you know, that we can move the state forward.
All right. Well, thank you so much to you, Representative Chris Tuck, for being in the studio with me. Thank you, Representative Mike Chenault, for being on the phone with us today. And also thank you to Governor Bill Walker for being on with us earlier today as we talk about the budget and how to find a way forward. Thanks to Dave Waldron, our engineer, Monica Goki, and Josh Edge on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. Thank you for joining us.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.